Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Eric Beiler here with Jessica English in our first attempt
at Hi everyone.
Blog Talk Radio with webcam video. So if you're listening online, you can see there's a link where you can also see us online. It's written into the text. We have a very interesting show. An old friend of mine, Lowell Feld from Virginia, is joining us. Lowell has one of the most influential blogs in the state of Virginia called Blue Virginia. And he and I first met about the same time I met Annabelle Park, at the very beginning of my, I guess you could say, political awakening, when I decided to volunteer for a Senate campaign. Jim Webb was a Republican who became a Democrat, and that's going to be a theme in today's show, as you'll soon see, was challenging George Allen for the Senate seat for the state of Virginia. Lowell Feld, Annabelle Park, and I worked together. Annabelle and I as volunteers, Lowell as a staffer for Jim Webb's successful 2006 Senate campaign. Many of us remembered as the Macaca race. It was the first time that a YouTube video had decisive impact, some might argue, on the outcome of a political race. That was 2006. And now I'm turning it over to Jessica, who many of you should be able to see, thanks to Big Marker Technology, to introduce Lowell. Hey, Jessica, is your mic on? I don't hear you right now. Jessica, are you with us?
I can't. Sorry.
Okay, can you unmute Lowell? Hold on. All right, I'm going to bring in Lowell, and we are trying something new here, Lowell. Sorry for the delay.
Okay.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying listening to your technical challenges, we'll call them. I used to have
a
blog talk radio.
Yeah, or chaos. You could call it chaos if you want. All right. So I have Jessica here. I'm going to hand her the phone, and she can say hi to you. And I'll just introduce Lowell a little better than what I just did in that chaotic instance. So Lowell is also he and Annabelle and I first met in 2006. We've kept in touch ever since. He was one of the founders of the Raising Cain blog that was involved in the successful bid for Tim Kaine to become governor of Virginia in 2005. And then just as new media, social media was becoming a hot ticket in politics, Lowell was one of the first people to be hired specifically to do that job for the Webb campaign, Jim Webb's campaign, as I mentioned, in 2006. Raising Cain ended up shutting down, and Lowell created a new blog called Blue Virginia. So, Lowell, tell us about Blue Virginia and how it's been going so far.
Blue Virginia is going well. It's a couple of years old. Well, actually started in 2009. I started it up after the end of Raising Cain. I'd actually intended to get out of blogging, but, you know, so much for that, the best laid plans and all that. I think I've decided that I'm a political addict or junkie or something. But anyway, so I started Blue Virginia 2009. And, it's one of the largest state-based progressive. It's generally pro-democratic, but it's really, we really feel like it's accurate to describe it as a progressive blog in the country. It's one of the soapbox blogs. There's a whole network of progressive state-based and other blogs around the country, and it's a good blogging software because it allows people to go on, register accounts, post diaries themselves, post comments, rate each other's comments. So, you know, it's very interactive. And we post mostly a lot on Virginia politics. I mean, definitely a lot on that. That's the focus. But we post also on national politics and even occasionally on international. I studied the Middle East, actually, And I worked at the Energy Information Administration for 17 years, following world oil markets and focusing on the Middle East. So I actually just posted today on Mitt Romney's trip to Israel and what he had to say over there. So it's kind of focused on Virginia, but definitely other stuff, whatever kind of we feel like writing about. Also energies, you know, of course, since I worked at the Energy Information Administration is a big one. And I'm consulting on clean energy topics right now for a company in Arlington, Virginia. So I write a lot about energy issues as well. So, and yeah, and Eric and I have had a lot of fascinating conversations over the years. Eric was kidding around about how we've had these conversations, but nobody's heard them. So maybe today we'll have a little bit of a conversation about social media, about citizen journalism, about you know, the enhancement potentially of democracy, sort of digitally enhanced, I guess you could say, democracy, the proliferation of the ability of people to record video and audio and to distribute that around very quickly. So, you know, in fact, I think the last really intense conversation we had about that was a few years ago. So a lot's changed since then. And yeah, and so, you know, it's a rapidly evolving world when you're talking about social media. It's when I was on the web campaign in 2006, just briefly here, I mean, there was no Facebook was still confined to just college kids, so we didn't use Facebook. There was no Twitter. And I mean, it's like the dark ages, 6 years ago. It's not that long ago. It's amazing, you know, 6 years. And yeah. YouTube, that was one, like Eric said, that was one of the first uses of YouTube for political purposes, was that video of George Allen calling a young Asian or Indian American guy a macaca, which, of course, nobody knew what that meant at the beginning. But that was so, you know, that shows you how much has changed in just a few years. And to me, it's fascinating. So,
yeah, I think it's fascinating, too. Hey, Lowell, this is Jess.
Oh, you're here.
I'm waving
good.
At you on the camera, too. I don't know if you're in logged into Big Marker, but if people log into Big Marker, we can actually watch the show today. And it's pretty cool because I can see Justin and I can see Todd Lang. He's logged in. And so everybody wave at everyone. We have a little community here of people, and it's really fun to be able to see people's faces. And, of course, if you want to hear the show so that we don't have the overlapping of the audio, you still have to call into the show. You still have to use your phone and to hear the show. But if we want to see each other and have a conversation where we can see each other eye to eye, it's now possible thanks to Big Marker and thanks to Justin, who trained me on it. And I hope that you'll check it out. It's going to be interesting. I do have to flip back and forth every now and then so that I can open mics and run the switchboard. But I hope to see everyone. And I hope you'll give me a chance and help me out at the test run on this. If you have a question today, as always, call in 646-929-2495. But also, head on over to Big Marker. And Eric will give you the email address on that in just a second. And log in. It's really simple. And we can have a great conference call together and actually see each other as we discuss these issues. I'm really looking forward to talking to Lowell about Romney's visit to Israel, as well as some of the other things that are going on with the presidential campaign. I hope that you'll call in with your perspectives and your views as well. I'm really interested in hearing from people from all over the country and seeing you too. So I hope that you'll join us. I'm sorry that we started out to a rocky path there at the beginning. I was trying to figure out how I could run the switchboard and be in the Big Marker room at the same time. So thanks for being patient with me too, Lowell. I appreciate it. But it really has changed. I don't know if you know much about my story if you're a first-time listener. And Lowell, I don't know how much you know, but I'm a single mom of four, and I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I stock shelves at Target. And I don't think even 2 years ago that this was an opportunity that could be afforded to somebody like me to be involved as a political commentator, or to host a radio show that talks about politics and how to be an active citizen and how to really get involved and share opinions with each other in a civil way. So we really have come a long way. That was a perfect intro into that. And I know that you've worked with Eric, so I'm also looking forward to Eric chiming in every now and then throughout the show to offer insight and ask you questions about different topics. If you'd like to join our conversation, again, do call in 646-929-2495 to hear our conversation today. And like I said, if you want to see it, Eric, what's the email address, or not the email address, the web address that people need to go to so that they can see the show as well?
Well, it's bigmarker.com, but the best place to find the link, which is long, would be to go to coffeepartyusa.com, and it's on the home page. It says click here to listen and click here to watch. If you listen online, they'll be on a delay, but if you actually call 646-929-2495 and listen on your phone, then it would be in sync with the video conferencing at bigmarker.com.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's jump in. Lowell, I know that you probably have some opinions leading up to this election, and we're already in July. I can't believe that we're at the end of July already. Can you believe it? It's just gone so fast. It feels like it should be January still for some reason to me. But we're getting really close, and I know the campaigns in my neighborhood are ramping up. There's lots of emails from different people saying, hey, bring a friend down to the campaign office. We're doing phone banking. We're doing lit drops. We're going to be marching in this parade on such and such date. Are you involved this year with any campaigns?
Well, you know, of course, I run the Blue Virginia blog. That takes me – running a blog is, I think to do it right, I mean, it takes a long time. So I'm mostly focused on that. I mean, it's probably, 20 hours at least or more a week of my time. I mean, I might get more involved as it gets closer with some phone banking and some other stuff too, but we'll see on that. But yeah, it's in 2008 we actually were hosting some volunteers from the Obama campaign at our house, so maybe we'll do that again too. That was kind of fun, actually.
Wow.
Meeting the volunteers, but well, there were people coming from all over the country, and of course, in 2006, we didn't host Eric and Annabelle, but they came. They were some of the people who came from all over the country. Thanks to, again, not to harp on the same subject all the time, but social media, which I think is where most people found out about the campaign and about George Allen's remarks. And some people, like I know Annabelle told me, were outraged, and I think Eric as well, at those remarks, and they felt motivated by that to get on an airplane and to come out to Virginia and to volunteer for a campaign. And I think they had intended to only stay for like a week or something or a few days, and they ended up staying for months, and then I don't even know if they ever really left. So they're still kind of hanging around. So but anyway, that's how people nowadays sometimes often even get involved with politics. And like you said, I mean, a few years ago, you couldn't have been a radio host. The barriers to entry were too high, the costs, the technical expertise needed and all that. And now we can do these kind of things. Raising Cain was one of the early blogs. Really, political blogging got going in around 2003 with like Daily Kos and a couple other national Democratic or progressive blogs and some conservative ones, too. And so 2005, it was still kind of in its infancy, but, today it's widespread. So, but yeah, my involvement's mostly focused on the social media kind of side of things. I feel like that's kind of my area of interest and maybe comparative advantage, I guess, or something, to use an econ term.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get involved with that again? How did you first get the idea to do the blog?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I had been reading, like in 2003 and 2004, I started reading blogs. I started reading like Daily Kos and Mighty D and some other political blogs online. And they were getting really popular. And during the 2004 Kerry Bush campaign, or even before actually, during the primaries, the Democratic primaries in 2003, I got involved with the draft Wesley Clark campaign, or effort, I should say. That was a grassroots movement that was trying to get four-star general Wesley Clark to run for the Democratic nomination for president, and then ultimately to hopefully get him elected, which we obviously didn't, but we tried. But and that was largely online. A lot of that was on using, you know, like Yahoo groups and blogs and whatever electronic, of course, email and instant messaging and stuff like that. So whatever electronic or, you know, communications media we had available to us, we used that. So then after, when Kerry lost to Bush, I was like very disappointed. I was not, like a lot of progressives and a lot of Democrats, were not happy that Bush was going to have another 4 years. So sort of racking my brain, what can I do to get, I wanted to get involved more even than what I had with the Draft Wesley Clark movement. And I was just sort of thinking, what can I do right away? Because 2005 didn't seem like much was going on. And then I realized, wait a minute, I live in Virginia. And I had honestly never really paid attention to Virginia politics particularly. I had focused on international and national issues. And then
sure,
I was like, wait.
Sure, I suppose when you were studying, you were probably focused more on that. And so then
what really
got you involved in your local politics? Because I know for me, I was always focused more on presidential races and things like
right.
that, but maybe not my local city council
right.
or my local House seat or my local Senate seat. And it wasn't until my friend ran for a House seat, and I think it was House seat 10A or 10B in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, that I really even paid attention to my state legislature
mm-hmm.
races.
That's one way, yeah, that's definitely one way, you know, to that people get pulled into politics, I think, is people they know or local level. I actually went kind of the other way. I mean, I was focused nationally, and then when Kerry lost to Bush, I felt this need to do something, and then it was like, what can I do? And then, well, it turned out Virginia has governor elections in these odd years. So 2005 was a Virginia governor's election coming up, and I was like, well, you know, why not try to get involved with that? And then I was like, how can I best get involved? I like to write. I liked blogs. I thought it was interesting. I was like, why don't I try starting my own blog? And so I did. I had no idea if anyone would ever read it. I just felt like trying it. So I started Raising Cane. It was about like January, around New Year's, a little after that, 2005. And it started like getting traffic. People started reading it. And started growing. We started getting more contributors, and just kind of went on from there. And like, and then, you know, we helped to elect Tim Kaine governor that year. And then, you know, at the end of that year, we started the Draft James Webb movement. But that's a whole other story, to try to persuade Jim Webb to run for U.S. Senate, and that worked. So that was pretty cool. So that's how I got involved. It was kind of from the other direction. My frustration at national politics and how the country was going, and wanting to get involved. And I guess to sum it up, it's sort of like, think globally, act locally. That's what I decided to do. And, you know, I felt like I could make more of an impact locally than trying to change the world, and maybe try to like help win a race in Virginia and start turning things around in my home state.
Excellent. I love it. I think it definitely takes local involvement. How about you guys, all my listeners out there and viewers? What do you feel about your local and national, international elections and issues? Give us a call, 646-929-2495. Check us out on Big Marker. You can watch the show today. And we have a few people who are in the room right now. You can even hear it on Big Marker, it sounds like. So you can even hear my clicking of my typewriter as I type messages to people in the chat room. If you want to chat on Big Marker, you can chat on there as well. We're trying out this brand new, brand spanking new technology so that we can connect communities even further by seeing each other. I think that it helps when we're having a conversation, especially of a political nature. I think it helps us to stay more civil when we can see a person on the other side of the video camera. Somebody is holding up a wake up and stand up message up to me right on their camera. It looks like Chad is in the house. It's so great to see people. I'm glad, because we can't really do a test run of anything or a first show if nobody comes into the room. So join us on here, guys. It'd be fun to see all the listeners out there. Also, if you want to call in with your own story or questions for our guest today, Lowell Felt, he's a blogger. He's been involved in political campaigns and politics He also met Annabelle and Eric right at before Coffee Party even existed, when they were working on the documentary 9500 Liberty, and they were in Virginia and in a community that was being torn apart. And we're going to get into that with Lowell and talk more about that. But what do you think about Lowell's idea of being frustrated internationally and getting involved locally? I think it's fabulous. How are you getting involved this year in campaigns? Give me a call. Let me know, 646-929-2495. And, again, if you want to check out the show, it's bigmarker.com. You can go to Coffee Party's website and find the link there. So, again, thanks for listening, and give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation. It'd be great to hear from you. Lowell, so back to the story. I have seen the documentary 9500 Liberty and was really it reminded me of a lot of places that I've lived. I lived in Minnesota for most of my life, but I was born in Georgia. I lived in Tennessee, Virginia as a elementary and middle school child. And I lived in Tennessee too. I don't know if I mentioned that. But anyway, when I saw the folks in the town and county in Virginia that were involved in this, this real kind of community uproar over the legislation that was passed by the local community leaders to be able to stop people and look for their papers. And it was a precursor to what happened in Arizona. It really reminded me of communities that I've lived in all over, both here in Minnesota and in the South. And I really was able to connect with the people in the story and the people in the town, in your town, because I could draw parallels to people in my own community who would have those same thoughts, those same feelings. And I thought it was just a really honest portrayal of what happened. Since you were there, I want to ask, what did you think of the documentary, and how did you first find out about the issue in your community, and how did you get involved, and what part did you play in that?
I don't live in Prince William County. I live in Arlington County, but I met Eric and Annabelle on the Web campaign in 2006, so I knew them really well. And on Raising Cain, I mean, one of the issues we were certainly covering was the immigration, or whatever you want to call it, the quote-unquote illegal immigration issue. This was becoming a big political issue in 2007 in Prince William County. The chair of the Board of Supervisors there, Corey Stewart, decided to make it a big issue to crack down on illegal immigration in the county. And as part of his, he was running for re-election, and the guy has statewide ambitions. In fact, he's almost certainly going to be running for lieutenant governor of Virginia next year. So he is an ambitious, up-and-coming politician, and he was hoping to, I think, ride that issue. He may believe it as well. Who knows with politicians, you know? But he was definitely hoping to ride that issue, I think. And so he pushed really hard on that, and so then Eric and Annabelle, what they started doing, and this is, to me, really cool, is in this what we were talking about earlier, digital democracy and the democratization of politics, potentially, and citizen journalism. They went down to Prince William County, where Eric is from, actually, and decided to do a documentary and start to record what people were saying, interview people, go to the county board meetings, record them, and they created a YouTube channel for what they were I don't know if at the beginning, I don't think they planned to do a full-fledged movie, but they started putting up these videos, and I was posting them at Raising Cain and commenting on them, and I was part of trying to help them fight what Corey Stewart was trying to do. We all agreed that, you know, that we didn't agree with Corey Stewart. So that was my involvement. And then it developed into they were going to turn it into a movie. I mean, I got to see some early cuts of it and everything, which was really cool, and to see how that movie evolved. And I mean, it ended up becoming a superb, I think, film. It won, I believe, some awards. It got Roger Ebert, I think, gave it like 3.5 stars or something like that, and excellent rave reviews, and, you know, a great movie, very powerful, shows, you know, how politics can affect a local community and really potentially even tear it apart or even bring it together in some ways. I mean, I think you see in that film. So, I wasn't involved in, you know, really putting to get the movie together. I did give them some feedback, a fair amount of feedback over the time, and I was helping to publicize it. Every time they posted up a video, just about, I was posting it on the blog. So that was kind of my involvement. But they're to me, Eric and Annabelle are the rock stars of that one. I mean, there's not even close. I mean, the work they did there was, I think, amazing and innovative and even somewhat courageous, because there was a lot of anger and even hatred, vitriol. It got nasty. If you see that, I strongly recommend everyone watch 9500 Liberty. It's entertaining. I wasn't in the movie personally, because I don't really live in, you know, Prince William County. I mean, most of the characters in the movie are live in Prince William County. So,
Hey, Lowell. Yeah. It's Eric. Enough about 9500 Liberty. But thanks.
Okay. I thought you'd love talking about 9500.
It is a precursor to Coffee Party, and there definitely is a connection, because the solution to the partisanship, the ugliness, the divisiveness, the racial tension that was being generated there for that campaign, the 2007 election, once it was time to actually make policy and not just deal with the politics, civility was called for, and some transpartisan, bipartisan cooperation was called for, and that was really what we modeled Coffee Party off of. But I just sent out a big email blast to say we were going to talk about 2012, so enough about 2007
and
2008.
Right, okay, yeah.
But there's an interesting segue, because you recently blogged about the very same Corey Stewart, the very same chairman of the County Board of Supervisors in Prince William County, who was hoping to ride the sort of Tea Party, anti-immigrant, sort of hate-based sentiment to lieutenant governorship, and he is going to run next year. Isn't that right?
Yes, he is running.
Well, for whatever reason, you know, the national zeitgeist is now talking about things like investing in the people of this country rather than only investing in the profiteers in this country. And you took note of that and even had some fun at the expense of Greg Latique. I was hoping you could tell us about that.
Yeah, our old friend Greg Latique. Greg Latique was a character, and we won't mention it much more, but in 9500 Liberty, Greg was one of the leaders of the anti-immigrant movement, and he runs a blog as well called BVBL. But anyway, Black Velvet, Bruce Lee. So Corey Stewart, the other day, he was at a county board meeting, and he gave a little speech, which it could have been channeling Elizabeth Warren or Barack Obama, talking about the crucial importance of investing in our infrastructure. He started talking about the interstate highway system in the 1950s and how that generation, the greatest generation, built that interstate highway system. And without that, he said, America would not be nearly as possible or as wealthy or as successful as it is today. And then he kept going on, and he said, you know, to move in the future, we cannot leave our children with a deficit of infrastructure. We've got to invest in infrastructure. That is the mother's milk of future prosperity. I mean, that is exactly what Barack Obama and Elizabeth Warren and others are saying. That's exactly, if we don't invest in those things, he said, our kids are going to be starting behind. And he actually said, I know this isn't going to play very well in a Republican convention next year, which I think is sad that wouldn't play well, but we need to be upfront with people, and we need to let them know you can't get something for nothing. We have to pay for infrastructure. You know, it doesn't just come for free. It doesn't work like that, he said. We have to pay for this stuff. We have to make those investments. It's absolutely essential to our kids, to the future, that we make those investments and not shy away from them and not shy away from the cost of them. So, you know, that this guy is a conservative Republican, but he's running a county, and it's a large county, and it's a growing county.
Large county, I think there's, 380,000 people?
What's the population? Eric would know off the top of his head. It's several hundred thousand. It's Prince William County.
Yeah.
You know,
Eric, I've unmuted you. Do you know?
Yeah, that's correct. 380,000 and growing.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, so he knows. I think, you know, when you're at the local level, you're more in touch with kind of like reality. I mean, you know, you have to make the roads work. I mean, if they have potholes in them, you have to fill them in. You have to make the whatever the services. You have to pick up the trash. It has to get someone has to pick up the trash. I mean, you don't, but you know, it's got to get picked up. You got to have police and firefighters, and you got to educate kids. That's usually a huge chunk of the budget, educating children. And so all these services. I mean, you have to figure out how it gets paid for. But without that investment in your infrastructure, let's just say all the roads in Prince William County just fall apart. What business is going to want to come and locate in Prince William County if you can't get around? Or if there's trash lying around on the street corners because it doesn't get picked up, I don't think too many families are going to want to live there. Or if the schools are terrible and falling apart, so it's amazing to me. There's like a disconnect here. Corey Stewart can make a speech like that, and he's talking at a local level in his capacity as chairman of the board of Prince William County, but then you get this rhetoric at the national level as if government has played no role. The interstate highway system, I guess, I don't know, did individual people go out there and with a pickaxe or something and a little bit of tar and each build a little section of the interstate highway system, you know? Like, no, of course not. I didn't build the internet. Look, we couldn't be having this show right now without all this technology. Well, who did that? So, you know, I mean, DARPA, which is one of the government agencies focusing on defense, did much of the research for that led to the development. It wasn't Al Gore. They like to joke about that. But it was the government to a large extent. Our collective efforts as a society and as a civilization, whether it's at the city level, county level, you know, country level, whatever, sometimes often are needed to do great things, to win World War II, to conquer, to build great, you know, infrastructure projects like the Tennessee Valley Authority, to build the interstate highway system, all that, you know. So I just don't. It really boggles my mind, this sort of disconnect between what someone like a Corey Stewart can say at the local level in a speech like that, and then to say, but this probably is going to hurt me in a Republican convention next year. Why would that hurt you? It's just obvious. This is, and he even said, this is really just basic, obvious stuff. You have to pay. I mean, this isn't really complicated. I mean, things just don't pop up out of nowhere for no cost. I mean, you have to pay for something.
And it's the perfect segue. It's a perfect segue into the you didn't build this.
Right, you didn't build that or whatever.
That, right.
Yeah, that, which he was referring to clearly. It was mangled grammar, no doubt about that. But the whole antecedent to that was Obama was talking about, and that was a speech in Roanoke, Virginia, a couple weeks ago, Virginia being a swing state. Obama's here a lot. And he gave a speech and he said, you know, if you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help, which is, to me, seems obvious. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we have that's allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. There's the roads and bridges again. If you've got a business, and then he says, you didn't build that. Well, clearly he didn't mean the business. He's talked a million times over the years about how people build businesses, but somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet so that all companies can make money off the internet. So, you know, that's what we're talking about here. We succeed, according to Obama, because of our individual initiative, yes, but also because we do things together.
Yes. Well, you know, that would be the idea of government, right? People coming together and collectively acting on behalf of the good of all of us, right?
Right. Well, also things that one person or two people or three people can't do. I couldn't. Three of us, let's say Eric, you and I decided, we're going to build an internet. We couldn't. Like, it's too vast a project. Or create an army, armed forces to defend the nation. Or national security, you know, police forces and first responders. And just all the different, or an education system for the country. You know, it's not even physically or humanly possible for just a couple people to do that. That's a national effort. So that's what Obama was getting at, and amazingly, that's also, you know, exactly what Corey Stewart, a conservative Republican, was getting at. There's really common ground here, and yet it gets politicized, and then it's like all common sense is thrown out the window, you know. As soon as it gets into the presidential or even U.S. Senate race level, you know, it's like all the stuff that just seems like stuff you learned in seventh grade civics class, you know, that's common sense, just sort of disappears into the ether. And all of a sudden it's like, no, wait a minute, I built everything myself by the sweat of my brow, you know what? No, you didn't. I don't think so. No offense, but I mean, like, you know, that if you did, you're the most amazing, you know, human being in human history, obviously. So that issue. You know, the Romney campaign is running TV ads attacking Obama out of context, pulling his quote, you know, you didn't build that, which he was referring to, obviously, it seems obvious to everyone except the Romney campaign, to highways and bridges and teachers and education systems and all that. And the Obama campaign's fighting back, of course. But this is the level of our political discourse in this country. And to me, it's utterly unenlightening and not helpful. I mean, we should be
Lang, who's on our Big Marker site, they're both speaking to their base. And I know today in the New York Times, I was reading a piece and I quoted it in our email that we sent out to everyone. It is written by Jeff Zeleny. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And in it, David Axelrod is speaking. He says, is it a different kind of race than 2008? Of course, said David Axelrod, a senior campaign strategist. If we were passive in the face of this onslaught we are facing, our folks would be unhappy. There are few on our side who are counseling us to sit idly by. Mr. Romney and his allies are giving as good as they get, lacerating Mr. Obama as hapless in promoting job creation, feckless with allies in Israel, and determined to expand government until the United States resembles Sweden. As the campaigns prepare for the next phase of the race, the two sides are taking stock of what they have achieved in their first sustained engagement, a relentlessly negative effort over the last 2 months, like you were just talking about, to define the other. The exchanges have been so fierce that hardly a positive ad has aired in July. And Jeff goes on to write, yet there could be real peril for the president in being seen to exchange the inspirational mantra of his first campaign for commercials mocking Mr. Romney, as he is shown singing America the Beautiful. And he says, the president's prospects for reelection now rest in part on one of the biggest gambles of his career, that the benefits of trying to eviscerate Mr. Romney outweigh the cost to his own image and reputation. So it's an interesting topic, and I'm interested in what your perspective is here. I mean, and for everyone to call in too, and those of you who are on Big Marker, chime in and or call into the show, 646-929-2495. Again, you can find the link for Big Marker where you can see the show and see the other people who are listening in who have joined in. Just create an account, and then you can put yourself up there too by clicking on the video icon. It looks like a little movie camera, an old-fashioned one. and then let us know what you think about all this negative campaigning. What have you seen on the TV that has inspired you to get involved in a campaign? What have you seen or heard in the newspaper or on the radio that has gotten you excited to get out there and hit the pavement for your local candidates, for your party? Or has it just gotten to the point where you're so sick of the mudslinging, you just feel like bowing out and you're done? I'd love to hear your perspective. Give me a call, 646-929-2495. Hey, Janine, it's so cool to see you. Oh, my gosh, you guys. Okay, there are people coming on Big Marker right now, so it's really cool because we can see each other. And you can see me taking notes and goofing around over on my end of it too, in order to be able to do the show. So I don't know, you can kind of get an insider view on that. But, again, we're joined today by Lowell Feld. And, Lowell, I'd like to hear your response to the piece that Jeff wrote, just the part that I quoted there, and how you feel. What tactic do you want to see your party taking when it comes to this negative campaigning or campaigning in general? How should we be responding? How should the party be responding? And again, guys, if you want to give us a call, do so. We only have an hour and a half show, and we're almost, you know, we're pretty far in the way with the show. So give us a call. Let us know your perspective, too. I'm going to go back over to the switchboard now. So I'm going to sign off for a second for all those of you who are in Big Marker watching and check out the switchboard, see if we have anybody raising their hand who would like to join our conversation. But, well, I'll give you a chance to respond.
I guess, you know, there's a number of different things. I've actually been reading a lot recently about the early history of the United States. Very interesting. I mean, you know, the concept that this is the most negative campaign, and every election is like that. But, you know, you go back to the beginning, Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, those guys, they were ripping each other apart. I mean, they were accusing each other of wanting to set up a monarchy. They were accusing each other of treason. They were accusing, I mean, everything of having sexual relations with their black slaves, you know. I mean, it was nasty. So nastiness in politics is not exactly a new thing. Of course, today we have TV and you know, cable, and we have so many different media to broadcast that in 24/7 instantaneously. Back then, you know, they wrote under pseudonyms, just like we do on the blog sometimes. I mean, I write under my real name, but a lot of people do write on pseudonyms. And Alexander Hamilton did that all the time, and Thomas Jefferson wrote through surrogates and viciously attacked each other. So I guess, you know, I'm not saying – I don't think people are going to be angels, and I don't think politics is just necessarily going to be like that. And I definitely don't think the answer is to withdraw from politics and discuss – this is our country. This is our government. It's government, I believe what Lincoln says, government of, by, and for the people. And if we step out, and then what we're doing is we're ceding our democracy, we're ceding our country, really, to the people who are not going to back out. And who are those people? Well, the corporations, definitely. They're not going anywhere. They have a huge financial stake. This is not a conspiracy theory or anything. They really do have a huge financial stake in getting legislation passed of various kinds or blocking or whatever. They're not going away. They have staff, lobbyists, whatever, that work year-round. So if we step out, those people will have – you're just clearing the field for those people to do – basically have free reign. And also really partisan political – people who have agendas, you're clearing the field for them. I mean, you basically, you know, if people step away, you're ceding the democracy to everyone else but the people. And so I definitely think that's not the answer, is just throw up your hands and say, oh, it's so awful, they're so mean to each other. I mean, the only thing I would say is, I mean, I would like to see at least truthfulness in these ads. I mean, is that really too much to ask that on our public airwaves that, like, you know, you can't even have – I mean, you know, there's all these fact-check organizations out there, and they routinely give – and I know I'm biased, but, I mean, there have been more. I think if you go out there and check, you'll see that there have been more of the sort of, like, four Pinocchios or the Pants on Fire. That's one of my favorite ones.
Pants
Liar.
On Fire is my favorite.
That's a good one.
That one here.
Yeah, and but I think the Romney – not even so much the Romney ads, but the third-party groups, these super PACs, that don't have to disclose who's funding them. They don't have to say who their donors are, anything. And they just have these ads running out there that are, get like Pants on Fire Liar, you know, and Four Pinocchios. They're totally false. There's not any truth to them, practically. I mean, like this one, where did the stimulus money go? That was – I wrote a piece on Blue Virginia, and I posted it on Daily Coast as well the other day. Where – there's an ad running – every time I turn on the TV, I see this ad. Where did the Obama stimulus money go? That was ominous sort of, you know, voiceover and music or whatever. And it's like – and they pick out a few little – tiny little things like $1 million here, $1 million there, and they even distort those. Windmills from China, electric cars from Finland, like – and all the money supposedly went to his cronies and campaign contributors. Nah. So I went back and checked. Where did the Obama stimulus money go? Well, like about around half of it went in tax cuts to Americans. Like 95% of Americans got tax cuts. I mean, that's where a lot of the money went. Then a huge amount of the money went to building infrastructure, to highways, bridges, rail, you know, other infrastructure. A lot went to the states. in direct aid to the states to help them so they didn't have to lay off teachers and first responders. You know, and you just go down the list, and it keeps going down, 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 down. And you finally get down to these tiny little items that they pick out and run these ads about that are minuscule, like 0.00001% of the stimulus. And then they distort even that because it's not really true that, like, the money went to, you know, for windmills in China. There's a tiny grain of truth to these things. So I guess what I'm saying is I would just like to see – it would be nice if we could just have at least truthful – somewhat truthful, is that too much? You know, ads on our public airwaves, and they are public airwaves. And I mean, these stations, I mean, do sort of. I think in theory, they're supposed to have a duty to check the accuracy of the ads they run. I mean, but
well, I agree. And you know what, though, I think that that this is. I'm so glad you brought up the stimulus because one of the first pieces that I ever was involved with was through Minnesota Public Radio. And they have a public insight network, and they had sent out questionnaire regarding the government stimulus, if any of their listeners had received any, or if they saw anything mm-hmm. happening in their community that was part of that. And where I happened to live was in a little neighborhood, and you could go out of the neighborhood two ways. If you went to the right, you had to hit a railroad track, and so oftentimes we all went to the left to avoid the railroad track in case if there was a train, because that would make
That wouldn't be nice.
Yeah, if you went to the left, you had to go over a bridge that went over the little river that ran through our town of Fergus Falls. And right outside my neighborhood was a big orange sign, and it said American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
Mm-hmm.
And it had, you know, symbols on it. And so I looked it up, and I found out, oh, my gosh, this is the stimulus. This is the Stimulus Act. That was the actual name of the act that became known as the Obama Stimulus. Which I think is, you know, truth-telling, let's call it what it is. Let's call the act what it is instead of coming up with Obamacare and Obama stimulus. Because
right.
You know what? If we lie to people and we call it something else and we advertise it as something else, then how are citizens supposed to know what's happening in their communities, especially when we're talking about that kind of money? So we had all these signs all over the neighborhood and on both sides of the project saying that this bridge was being built, this money and these jobs were coming to our little community, one of the smallest counties in the state, due to the Obama stimulus, but legally known as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So I put that down in my email to Minnesota Public Radio. And then I was also happened to be going back to college the year that Obama became president. And I was one of the people, one of the millions of people who was able to benefit from the $30 million that was set aside to extend and increase the Pell Grant for people like me who needed retraining, older non-traditional students, especially women. And so it just so happened that I was a recipient of the Pell Grant, and that was enabling me to go to community college. And so I put that in the email. And then as it turned out, our home was not insulated. It was built in 1885. And we just had a little wood burning pellet burning stove. You could either burn corn or pellets, and we had been receiving help with heating assistance because in Minnesota it gets pretty cold, gets about 30 below, and sometimes 50 below. And this little wood burning stove, you know, they came in and actually found that it was not heating the house enough, and it was causing some damage in the walls. And so our family actually qualified for a part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that was winterizing homes to save energy costs and to reduce the amount of assistance that was going to low-income families who qualified for energy assistance. And so here we were just one family, but we had this bridge that was being built that we were going to use every day.
Mm-hmm.
I was going back to school. They came and they not only filled our entire home with insulation so that we could retain some of the heat, but they retrofitted it with what I came to call our Obama furnace and put in a furnace so that we could heat our home efficiently as well with natural gas as well as effectively, because prior to that we weren't getting enough heat in our home. And so, you know, and that was just one example where the press, I really felt, fell down on their job, but where a citizen could step up and say, hey, this is what's happening in my community,
right.
You know, and it was due to these signs that I saw. So I think, yeah, it's very frustrating that
yeah, it's
you have 1% media who's, you know, definitely impacted by the ruling class in this country, people who can afford to and be the recipients of these super PACs and all the money that they throw into the campaign, and who really generate a lot of misinformation. But what an opportunity that we have here with this great technology that we're using right now, where we can see each other, where we can talk to each other, to get the word out there. And I think I commend you for starting this blog that you started way back when it was all brand new, because that's just a piece of it, you know, so that we can start to question some of these tactics and we can really start to maybe get to some of that truth that we're seeking. But I do believe that we have a little bit of work to do.
Yeah, we do. You know, one thing.
I echo your frustration.
Yeah, one thing I would say, you know, people, citizens of this country have a responsibility. I mean, I know this is like, you know, eat your peas sort of thing here, but. But, I mean, people really do, I think, and democracy will not work unless you have an informed and engaged citizenry. I really believe that. So, I mean, the information's out there. On this case of the stimulus, I was so sick of seeing the ad. I was like, wait a minute, there's got to be numbers out there. So I, within, like, 10, 15 minutes of Google searching, I found a really good source for, and I just did a little spreadsheet, crunched the numbers a little bit, made a nice graphic with colors and everything, and I posted it up on my blog, and I posted it on Daily Coast, and next thing I know, Daily Coast promoted it to the front page of Daily Coast, which gets 600,000 visits a day. So I'm like, wow, this little graphic that I put together in like an hour, I just went out there, found the data, put it together, and it's like could be seen by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, anyone, I'm not saying I'm great at all. In fact, quite the contrary.
No,
anyone could have done
that.
Yeah,
but it's just really incredible what a person can do.
Yeah, I mean, the data's out there. See, so when people say, oh, you know, I mean, there's so much misinformation, and again, throw up their hands, my attitude is to go the other way. And maybe this is just the way I am, the way my attitude is and everything, but I don't like usually throw up my hand. I mean, I say, well, wait a minute. I'm going to try to find out about this. I'm going to try to do something about this. This can't be right. Whatever, and I don't just give up, though. I mean, I spend a little bit of effort and try to. And so, I mean, people have to realize in a country, in a democracy, that we are all part of it, and we have a responsibility. So, I mean, you can't just be like, oh, the government is, you know, over there, that thing over there. No, it's us, you know. I think, you know, and that's something I think gets lost, too. So, I mean, more people get involved, speak out, and check, fact check and all that. I mean, I think that that will help to, there's a lot of problems, obviously, and we have structural economic problems and a lot of different issues. They're not going to get solved overnight, but that at least would help to maybe prevent our democracy from deteriorating and ultimately potentially falling apart, which would be a terrible disaster if that ever happened. So that's just my eat your peas moment here in the conversation. Hope
well,
you don't mind.
I do have a caller calling in on Skype. If you called in and you're on Skype, I only have one caller calling in from Skype, so I'm going to come to you in just a second. Please be ready to tell me your name and where you're calling from, and then give us your question or comment. I do want to let people know the number again, 646-929-2495, or head over to Coffee Party USA so you can see the link to Big Marker and join us there. We do have a chat going on in the chat room, and if you want to join us face-to-face, you can become a member and use your webcam to join the little community of people that we have in there. It's really fun to see listeners face-to-face, and I think that it really adds to a sense of community, and let us know what you're doing and how you're feeling about this presidential campaign, this race that we have going on. How do you feel about the negative campaigning and the amount of campaigning that we've had? A lot of times in the past, before there was all this money available, you know, the campaigns didn't start ramping up until later in the summer. What are you seeing in your neck of the woods? And I think, you know, going back to what Lola and I were talking about just a second ago, I think the first step to having an educated democracy is to kind of pulling back the curtain and revealing, you know, our situation for what it is. And when we have a media, 1% media megaphone out there that can continue to propagate one misinformed story after the other, that can put these labels on these acts and on the legislation so that people are confused and do not understand or even know the name of the legislation that is creating jobs and economic growth in their neighborhood. That is irresponsibility. And let's have a discussion for the rest of our time that we have here today. Let's talk about how can we step up. What can we be doing? Let's inspire each other. If you have a story of, like Lowell, where you've been able to get the information out there, even if it's just to your neighbor face-to-face or at your local coffee party, give me a call, 646-929-2495. Caller calling from Skype. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Jessica. This is Tim Nolan. I am a member of Twin City Coffee Party. Good to
hey,
hear your voice.
Tim.
Good to hear. Lowell, it's, I can identify, you know, I started a blog sometime back, Global Peace, and really that is, isn't that fun? Because I've had a chance to fine-tune media, you know, and I started my focus on the three M's. There's money, military, media, or I call them the banksters, gangsters, and hucksters. And then within that, that's where you look at those areas through corporate media. That's I refer to as the hucksters. The media is people who are lame enough and dumb enough to watch the boob tube, as I call it. They'll get information that's filtered, fluffed, and fabricated. And then military, there's two, being a photographer, two shots I caught of Obama right away. It may upset me. He was surrounded by the generals in the Pentagon, what we used to call military playing grab ass. And then the other one was the banksters walking up to the White House. But I feel confident. There's Timmy Geithner testified, and now the Congress and unanimous want to audit the Fed. And that's some of the neat stuff that's been going on around through Facebook and one thing another. And I feel confident that I'm going to call, and the listeners, call your elected federal senators and tell them to vote in unanimous for Senate 202, that's audit the Fed. And also coming out of the U.S. Senate now is they want to abolish Citizens United, and that's where all the money goes. But I'm upset with Obama. He bought his stand. He's listened to his military. Kennedy listened to his military, but then he realized that was a fault. But Obama's two faults are bailing out the banksters, and then in as far as escalating the wars. What I have on my blog is I could not believe it, the hits that I've had on that. Did Mexican official blow the lid off a CIA-managed drug trade? And that's the why we're in Afghanistan. But I really I get discouraged. And listen, every once in a while I get a curve thrown at you stuff. But we are in the majority. And, you know, Mitt Romney is so far removed from he's a poster boy for the 1% because he's one of them. And then I really believe in Obama. I'm a delegate, and I worked damn hard in his campaign and yada, yada. But if he does what he said he was going to do the first term and goes for the history books, he can go down as one of the better presidents.
Mm-hmm.
But
like
we do a coffee party, we got to circle our wagons.
Tim, thanks for calling in. I mute you so that Lowell can respond. I just want to know, how did you become a delegate, and why did you decide to become a delegate, and what does being a delegate mean?
Yeah, okay, that's really neat because my son and I, a few years back, we went up to the local deal right at the precinct level, and all of a sudden we wanted to be delegates. So we were delegates at the mayoral convention back in 2005, the city of Minneapolis. And then I was elected later on as a county delegate. And I was also elected to the Minnesota DFL Constitution Committee. And not to be tooting my own horn, I said, you know, this same-sex marriage has a negative confrontation. The one guy, a white guy, said, I'm in the minority. I said, no, you're not. You're treated equal. Let's come up with something equality, and that's how we authored the marriage equality. And that's just that separation of church and state, but it goes right down the line. The right Republicans are so far, 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 far to that born-again moral majority that are so sleazy. But we got to get back into the middle. And that's the solution, the pillars of power, our health and education. Just with teachers and with nurses as a base, boy, there's a lot of people there, just with those two camps. But I recommend get involved. And that's how I found out being a delegate. I know all my elected officials, and you know, and I know one that she knows my stand on the military. And she flinches every once in a while. I've embarrassed her one time at a fundraiser, but I speak the truth, and I ask the ones coming up for election and all that stuff. But people that get involved, you have a say. That's what's so exciting about it. We got together at Al Franken's office. We're concerned people with some different interests about the war in Iran. And we had a conference call with two of his offices, and he voted, as one of the senators, that voted opposing escalating the deal with Iran.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely getting involved there as a delegate. And I know when I was elected delegate, I was very fortunate to be involved in nominating and the endorsement process for our Senate race. And at the time, it was Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, and he was vying for the endorsement. And Al Franken was the other person who was hoping for the endorsement. Of course, Al Franken got it. There was another gentleman, too. I can't remember his name anymore. But those were the two front runners. And it was very interesting, and I agree. I mean, being part of the process is really important. I also have another caller calling in from Skype. If you're calling in from Skype, I am coming to you right now. Please let me know your name and where you're calling from. And your microphone is open. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Jessica. This is Egberto. I just chimed in.
Hey, Egberto. How's it going today?
I don't know, but whoever that young man is that just spoke, I simply love what he had to say, and that's all I wanted to say. I'm enjoying listening to your show.
Well, thanks, and you know, Egberto, if you want to go over to Big Marker, you can check it out. We're also doing an experiment today. For those of you who are just tuning in, we are doing both radio and visual, so you can see the show happening. If you would like to join the community there, you can log in and we can see you as well, so we can see each other. And do ask us questions in the chat room. And thanks for calling in, Egberto. I agree, Tim's great. He's in our local coffee party here at the Twin Cities Coffee Party. I'm going to give Lowell a chance to chime in and talk more about that. And also Eric as well, I think, would like to say something.
Yeah, Eric, did you want to say something first, or there's a lot to. I mean, he raised a lot of different points, some very good points there. So, did you want to chime in first, Eric, or?
No, go ahead, Law.
So, I guess as far as you know, I agree with a lot of what. What was his name again? The caller. Anyway, I agree. I would agree with a lot of what he had to say. The media.
His name was Tim.
What's that? Okay,
it was Tim. It was Tim calling in.
Tim, yeah. He made some good points. I mean, you definitely need to. I mean, we already talked about this. People need to get informed and get involved. If you don't, you're ceding your power to the people with power, with money, with the ability to direct the conversation, to direct their politicians, our politicians, all of our politicians, to do what they want them to do. I mean, if you're giving, I'm not giving, I don't know about you, but I'm not giving hundreds of thousands or millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars like the Koch brothers and like Sheldon Adelson and some of these people are giving tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to their favorite politician. And in this case, I mean, I'm a Democrat and I'm going to focus on Mitt Romney here. And I think he's the recipient of most of this anyway, a lot of the super PAC money. From these individuals, these people want something from that money. I mean, they're not just doing it out of the goodness of their heart. Sheldon Adelson is over there with Romney in Israel right now. I mean, Sheldon Adelson has his own whole agenda himself that he wants, and he initially supported Gingrich. He thought Gingrich would be the one that would be more amenable to his agenda. So that's one thing. You know, I think if people, you know, don't get involved, they're just ceding the ground to the Koch brothers and the Sheldon Adelsons. And as far as the media is concerned, yeah, most of it is triviality, fluff, infotainment, sort of if it bleeds, it leads. You get a lot of just sort of the freak show sort of thing going on there. Very little analysis, very little depth. If you want that, you're going to have to dig down a lot deeper. I don't think you're ever – I mean, you know, PBS is pretty good, sometimes National Public Radio. But other than that, the corporate networks generally I think are awful. They also, another thing they do that drives me crazy is false equivalence. Everything's like both two sides, you know, equal two sides. When there's not always two equal sides to everything. I mean, just because one side says there is like climate change and the other side says there isn't, well, there's actually a scientific truth, you know, 98% of scientists say there is climate change. So anyway,
I think that's actually a very fascinating topic, you know, this idea that we can be bipartisan by giving equal credence to both sides of the argument, even though you have science on one side
right. And
religious belief on the other. It really is disingenuous to say that those two arguments are equal.
And yet the media,
oftentimes that's what we get, because the media has come out of this idea of being objective,
mm-hmm.
Of presenting itself as a mediator, of trying to get the information out there. But then a result of that is this, I forget the term that you used, but it was brilliant.
False equivalence. False equivalency. You know, I think they're also just plain afraid. Who pays? Let's face it. I mean, these corporate networks are doing, they need to stay in business. I mean, they're trying to get eyeballs, your eyeballs, my eyeballs, to watch their shows. And what they're paying for those shows with is advertising from mostly corporations and politicians, like in an election season like this, hundreds of millions of dollars of ads are running. So they don't want to piss any of those people off. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what interest
mm-hmm.
is it for them to do that? So by maintaining this faux sort of objectivity facade and this false equivalency, they can pretend to be unbiased and they're just presenting, you know, all the different sides. Well, yeah, but again, the problem is there is a truth out there. Usually there actually are
right. Facts.
You can look them
up.
I
like to call it the knowable world. The world,
yeah, knowable,
that we can look
empirical.
At. And understand,
yeah. And
that we can test, and that we can, you know, come to an agreement on.
Right. This is sort of like the basis of the Enlightenment and the Renaissance and Western civilization. I mean, you know, like that you can, in humans, we can, through our reason, we can investigate things, and we can find out the answers to phenomena. We don't just have to believe in spirits and ghosts and whatever that cause things. I mean, this is like hundreds of years now, and yet it's like the corporate media today is still back in the spirit world or something like that. They don't believe that you can actually find the truth. They present in an article or on their news show or whatever. Oh, this person says this, and then this person says that. Well, yeah, but what's the answer? So, yeah, that's really frustrating. As far as Romney being in the top 1%, I mean, I'll just say I don't really care if he's in the top 1%. That doesn't bother. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt was wealthy. A lot of people are wealthy. I don't really care about that per se. What I care about with Romney is that I think he is completely out of touch with the middle class. I think his policies, more importantly than being out of touch, his policies that he's proposed, if you go on his website or if you listen to what he said, like the Ryan plan, would devastate the middle class and working people in this country and the poor people in this country, they would potentially devastate Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. These are the main parts of the budget, whereas he would build up the military and he would slash taxes for the wealthiest Americans who don't really don't need it. Right now, tax rates are at the lowest levels in something like since the Eisenhower administration. They're extremely – actually, not the tax – tax rates are even lower than that. Tax rates are back to like the 1920s. Expending now is at the Eisenhower level. So, you know, we have very low tax rates on the top income earners in this country. And, you know, and so Romney, his plan is to double down on that, double down on the policies that basically got us into this mess. So,
and how do you feel the Obama campaign should respond? And, I mean, do you feel that, like many Americans, are you frustrated with Obama? I know there are a lot of people in the base who, you know, were hoping for the, like Tim, who were hoping that he would de-escalate. Tim also cited another example where he felt Obama was at fault. What do you feel the response should be? And should he really be tough on these issues?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are definitely frustrations, and I totally get that. I mean, the thing is, and I mean, this is going to sound like a bunch of excuses, but this is also, I think, just factual. I mean, Obama, when he came into office, inherited a mess. The economy was in free fall. And that's true. I mean, you just go back. Recession started way before Obama came in, and the financial collapse happened in the fall of 2008 when Obama was running for president. So this is what he inherited. He then went to try to take actions to do things about it. He got zero cooperation from the Republicans, who decided, and they said it outright, we want him to fail. That was their plan. They wanted Obama to fail. Of course, problem is, when you want the president to fail and the country's in a crisis, that means kind of like the country fails too. You can't bring down the president of the United States and not hurt, like, you know, the country as a whole. I don't see how you do that. So I think, you know, that. So I guess my frustration with Obama is I feel like he came in and he decided he wanted to really try to work with Republicans and bridge this partisan divide. And Eric and I have talked about this, and I think this is where we kind of differ to some extent. I think in theory it would be great to seek a middle ground or common ground, you know, between the two parties. But if one side is simply absolutely hell-bent on not cooperating with the other side, and if one side has also lurched to either the far left, or in this case, that's not what happened. The Democrats are very much a centrist, corporatized, you could say, party. Republicans lurched to the far right and decided they were not going to cooperate at all with Obama and the Democrats. So, you know, I just feel like at that point, you got to just say, all right, look, guys, I mean, I gave you a chance. I gave you multiple chances. I keep reaching out my hand. You keep slapping it away. We're going to go off. We have the majority in the Congress. We're going to now, and I'm the president, we're going to now go and we're going to do our thing. I mean, you're welcome to join us at any time, but in the meantime, while you're having a hissy fit or whatever, we're going to go off and we're going to do our thing. So I feel like Obama waited too long and kept trying and trying and trying to work with some quote-unquote moderate Republicans like Susan Collins and Olympia Snow and this one and that one, and they never did. He got no votes on the stimulus from the Republicans. He got no votes on American Reconstruction and Recovery Act, as you correctly stated, or on clean energy and climate legislation, or on healthcare legislation, or you just go down this long list. And even though he reached out, the healthcare legislation was basically RomneyCare. You know, he took almost all the Republican ideas. The individual mandate was a conservative idea initially, as an alternative to the employer mandate. So Obama still, he reached out. I mean, I really feel like he bent over double backwards in a way. Take their ideas. Cap and trade was another conservative idea coming out of the Heritage Foundation. And yet they still rejected it and went on all-out assault against it. So I guess my frustration with Obama is he didn't just say, look, guys, we're just, you know what, you're not going to cooperate. We're going to do our thing. We were elected. We got problems, big problems that we inherited. We need to solve them, and that's it. And if you're welcome to come back on any time, but we're in the meantime, we're going to help. We're going to work on fixing this mess, and that's it. I mean, you know, and I just feel like he wasted too much political capital and too much time in a futile effort to try to get people who wanted him to fail to, you know, try to work together with him. So you would have
liked to see a more aggressive Obama. And it's interesting because I feel the same way. You know, I was really frustrated when unemployment was able to be held hostage. I mean, how the heck could unemployment be held hostage during the worst recession we've seen in a generation, and when there was 9% unemployment? And I remember an economist saying at the time that it would have taken three years for them to create the jobs, to employ all of those people, to bring the unemployment rate back down, because that's how many jobs we'd lost in 2008.
Right, exactly.
Before Obama even became president. So it was so frustrating to me. Like, how the heck could this be held hostage when, you know, all these people were suffering and had to have those benefits extended because there was no jobs and there was no way to create the jobs. Okay, in the meantime, so they're held hostage so that we can continue to give tax cuts after tax cuts to people, you know, to yes, the middle class, which was important, I agree. But like, occupiers were able to make the argument, you know, this year, hey, tax cuts for the 99% kind of make sense, you know, the middle class needs tax cuts still so that we can get this economy stimulated, right? But how about we ask those 1%ers who are maybe in a better position to be able to help out our country at a time when we're facing the cost of two wars that, you know, Obama was the first to put on the budget in the first place, and the cost of regenerating this economy that had fallen in the trash can because of the derivatives market that was totally unregulated and that went crazy. And so it was just so frustrating to me. I agree. I wanted to see him take a stand. I wanted to see him frame the narrative. Frame the narrative. I mean, he didn't even frame the narrative. He was
right,
just like,
right.
Okay, guys, yeah, you can have it your way. And that was really frustrating. But at the same time, you know, I have to say, with these negative campaigns and with his decision now to, I'll hold this up for the people who are watching. You know, for him to decide to go negative with these campaign ads, and his strategy is to, you know, make people. President Obama and his campaign have made the determination that the only way they can win this race is to create a negative impression of Mitt Romney. Well, how about just telling the truth? How about just talking about the knowable world? How about offering some framework for the rest of us out there who get it, and the occupiers who've been occupying, and all of us middle-class people and poor people who've been working our butts off and to not see raises, to not see our economy recover for our end? You know, that might be a good strategy, but it's not very tough, and it's I know there's a lot of people who've been really frustrated with Obama, and I think maybe he's kind of responding to that with this negative campaigning.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would also say that there's a lot, probably too much focus on, you know, the president and the presidential race per se. I mean, Obama's one person. I mean, you know, he operates in the context of a Senate, which apparently now requires to get anything done 60 votes, which is not in the Constitution, by the way. You know, a lot of things would have passed with over 50 votes in the Senate, and we could have gotten a lot more done with that, too, especially if you have one party that's absolutely hell-bent on stopping. All they need is 41 votes in the Senate, and they can stop just about anything. And so, I mean, I would focus on the Congress as well. It's very important. These congressional races this year are also very, very important. People, and that's an area you can get involved with much more locally. Your local House race, mm-hmm. or your state, or your U.S. Senate race in your state. And that's going to be extremely important. Whoever is president, and I still think Obama is going to win. But you know, if he's going to have anyone to work with, in, you know, starting next January, that's going to be determined by what type of people are elected to the House and the Senate. So, I mean, I think also part of it is getting better people to get involved and then ultimately run for office. You know, we can't just complain if, like, we don't ourselves get involved or we don't ourselves even put ourselves out there for office. I mean, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, I don't like the quality of our leadership, and that's fine. I mean, we can say that, but, you know, at some point, you got to sort of be like, take the bull by the horns and say, all right, I don't like the quality of my leadership, so I'm going to get involved. So, I don't know. I mean, it's just, yeah, I agree. There's when the economy's bad, let's face it. I mean, and it's a tough situation with the financial collapse. Economists look at historically, and with financial collapses like this, it takes a long time to get out of that mess. You know, there's just a lot of frustration out there, and that's totally understandable. People are really hurting. And a lot of people are underwater with their mortgages, and a lot of people are out of work, and that's totally understandable. And the president gets a lot of that blame, even though it may have absolutely nothing to do with anything he did or didn't do. But if the economy were rip-roaring and doing great, he'd get the credit. Same thing, even if he had nothing. You know, it's just sort of the way it works. So that's life. But I think, you know, the answer to me is a lot of it is getting involved and getting engaged and fighting for what you believe in. I mean, another thing was the Citizens, you know, United, Tim brought up. That's, again, the influence of corporate money in politics. The answer to that is citizen democracy. There's only one way. I mean, you got to elect people, got to get involved, got to have people power, got to elect people who don't believe that corporations are people, my friend, as Mitt Romney said, and then start to change things. You know, you get Supreme Court nominees that maybe don't think like Scalia and Alito and these people who, you know, believe that, totally believe corporations are people and money should be unlimited spending in politics by super rich people and corporations. Well, then, you know, they're going to buy our democracy. This is very frightening. And so right now we have a basically 5-4 kind of divide on the Supreme Court. Sometimes it goes one way or the other way, but the next couple, there's some old people on there. I mean, the next few Supreme Court openings could determine for decades to come what the Supreme Court looks like. And if you get people in that same mold who are like corporations are people type of people, you know, you're going to have rulings for decades to come that favor the corporations and a lot of those will be harmful to the environment, harmful to working people, harmful to a lot of things. And so, you know, it all starts, though, got to get at the local level, got to get involved, got to get people elected, got to get good people in there. It's just there's a lot of work to do. So, you know, yeah, it's exhausting me even thinking about
it. It is kind of exhausting, you know, but here at Coffee Party and the work that we've been doing and the work that Annabelle and Eric started was to really provide a place for civility and reason to come back into the public discourse. And I think it's really important, as frustrated as I do get with one side being able to dominate the airwaves, and not even one side, because I really don't want to lump every Republican into that side. I mean, we have Michael Charney here. He has his own radio show. It's on Tuesday nights. It's actually what he co-hosts it with Eric Beiler. It's called The Middle Ground. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating show because Michael has really felt like he's been abandoned by his party, okay, because of all, he just felt like he had to, and I know you and I share this experience in common because I started out as Republican, and I remember in doing research for the show that you at one point were Republican as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yes, I
right,
was.
Right,
right. Yeah.
So, I mean, two disenfranchised Republicans right here, and yet when I first left, I was just done with politics because there really, for me, wasn't a clear-cut path of where I could go because it had always boiled down to two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I really like about the Coffee Party is that we have really demonstrated how successful it is to bring civility and reason into the public discourse because we've been able to have all of these fantastic conversations and with people from all different walks of life, all different political persuasions. And it's been interesting to find out where our perspectives meet and where we come together on things and then be like, well, you know, you start to wonder, why can't our elected officials do the same? And so I think it is frustrating for someone, especially who's living in poverty, who's bearing the brunt of this economy on a daily basis, especially, you know, it's coming up on August 1st, rent is due again, and it's like, oh, my God, panic attack, because I have no idea how I'm going to make rent. It's summertime. I'm not lazy. I just have, you know, kids that aren't in school right now, so it makes it more difficult to work. I am mowing lawns. That's going well. But, you know, it's just really frustrating sometimes to see the parties go back and forth and back and forth, all this mudslinging, and not really be able to come to any kind of action. It was great at the beginning when Obama had the Congress and, you know, House, when there were more people in there, so it wasn't so hard to get a vote to pass the Senate and the House. because they did start getting stuff done. And we did have the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which did pump money into our economy. And, you know, economists are now saying that, thank goodness for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel that it's important to have this ability and the reason and a place where we can all get together because, you know, for the Republican Party, if you're in the Republican Party and you're feeling disenfranchised the way I did back in 2004 because of all these what I felt were extremist views, I mean, I look at my representative from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, and I'm just like,
God. That's your
what
representative?
Is going
wow.
on here? Well, she's not my representative, but I have friends who are in her district, and she is from Minnesota, and it's just, you know, if it takes agreeing and really standing behind and campaigning for that kind of thinking to be a Republican, it's difficult, but yet if the other side is just going to be fighting back, you know, and with vitriol and matching it, you know, aggression for aggression, and having this WWF style fight all the time, then it just seems like where are all the people in the middle going to go?
Mm.
I mean, think this is an opportunity for us. Go ahead, Will.
Oh, sorry. No, I guess, you know, I think, politicians, from what I've observed, and I've observed a fair number of them up close and personal, they respond to incentives and disincentives. So if we create the right, I feel like if we create the right incentives for them to do the right thing, and they see that if they do it, they'll get rewarded by getting reelected or getting campaign contribution, whatever their rewards are, then they'll tend to more do that. If they also see that if they do something that pisses people off, that they get punished for that, that they will do that less. Unfortunately, right now it seems like all the incentives and disincentives are skewed in the other direction. It's like, you know, especially I think for whatever combination of reasons, and this is a whole long discussion in itself, but on the right, all the incentives seem to be to push people further and further to the right. So you see even solidly conservative U.S. senators, Orrin Hatch, getting primaried by a Tea Party guy, and, you know, even from the further right, because they're not pure enough. So all their incentive is to move further and further to the right, and all their monetary incentive is to do what the what big oil or you know, some of the large corporations want them to do. So, again, I mean, I'm going to harp keep, you know, like a broken record here, but, I mean, the only answer is, yeah, I agree, people have got to get involved, and whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, if a coffee party is the mode of expression, you know, that you're comfortable with, or Democratic Party or whatever, but the point is, I mean, that's the only way to eventually get to the critical mass where politicians say, okay, I cannot ignore these people, I have to listen to these people, or I'm going to lose. I'm not going to keep my seat, and so I better listen to these people. And so, but I feel like right now that's still not happening, even close to enough. I mean, you could see the results.
It's hard to compete with the big money on the other side. Well, you know, we have about 3 minutes left. Are you willing to stay on with us a little bit longer if we're able to extend the show?
I mean, I can stay on a little bit longer. I don't know how long you're thinking, but yeah, sure.
Okay, great. About just 15 minutes. I have a couple more questions, and I just want to give people a chance to call in, make their last points as well, and give Eric a chance to respond to the discussion today. So I don't want to keep you too long. I just wanted to see if that would work for you.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, cool. Well, folks, if you're joining us, we are at On the Bottom Line today with Lowell Feld. He is a blogger and has been, came into it from the very beginning. And we are talking today about the presidential race and about getting involved and citizens being part of the media and really getting the message out there so that we can begin to take control of the information and get the information out into the hands of people that is being distorted or that the big media microphone is actually misinforming us on. We do believe in a knowable world here at Coffee Party, and and that there is information that we can come to conclusions on, both with each other and also just through observation and finding out and getting involved and getting down to the bottom line of an issue, not to be too punny. We are also experimenting today with a new media. It's called Big Marker, and you can go on and actually see me on the show today and watch the show, most of it anyway, except for when I have to flip over to run the switchboard. But join us, and if you fill out a profile, you can also go in and create a profile and put your picture on there as well, so we can see you and we can talk face-to-face. We are just adding some more minutes on to our show here, so I'm back in the switchboard. If you're watching, you won't see me. I'm going to go ahead and put it back to Lowell. What do you think about the Occupy movement and how effective that is?
I mean, I think there's some really good things, you know, that came out of it. I mean, I love the slogan, "We are the 99%." Let's start with that. As far as effectiveness, I mean, I think this gets to, and I don't know if Eric wants to jump in at some point in this, but kind of something that Eric and I have discussed a lot. I mean, I think the key, what we have to do in politics is you have to effectively figure out a way to effectively organize and generate a critical mass to seriously bring force to bear. I mean,
they've definitely been able to get people in the streets and people who formerly were not involved.
Right, but the question is whether they've been able to translate that into actual clout in terms of policy, in terms of getting politicians to do what they want. And that's where I'm not sure I've seen that. Tea Party, I feel like, has. Now, I do feel like the Tea Party is in part an arm of the Republican Party, but to the extent that they're
interesting. So do you feel that the Tea Party is actually more effective than the Occupy movement?
Yeah, much more effective. I mean, the Tea Party has clearly helped to drag the Republican Party to the right in their direction. I think the Tea Party has been very effective. I think they've been they've used a lot of different techniques. I mean, I think some of them seem kind of silly, but they get attention. They're very good at that. But they also have a clear agenda. And it's not that long. It's not like 100 items or anything like that. I think part of the problem with the Occupy movement is it has a lot of different. It's a very disparate movement and kind of diffuse. Whereas with the
Tea Party, the invent of the 99% in itself was pretty effective and did a good job of changing the national narrative?
I think it did to some extent. Again, though, I'm not sure I think what it comes down to, I guess this is what the discussion with Eric a lot of times is. To me, you have to elect people. Ultimately, in a system like ours, you have to nominate, you have to find people to run for office, and you have to elect them. I mean, really, in the end, and you have to get people who are able to get an agenda, a focused agenda. You can't have a million things either. You have to have a few things that you're focused on, and try to push those. This is a vast country, 300 million people. It's an incredibly complicated system. It's a huge economy. To try to even get one major thing done in an administration in 4 years would be pretty good, actually. You know, that's getting healthcare reform passed, that's a major accomplishment. People have been trying for decades. But, you know, again, I mean, to have the coffee party, I think, if they're focused on, let's say, Citizens United, then that's the thing. They should be like monomaniacally almost focused on that, building power, electing people who will oppose, you know, that and try to move in a different direction. And that, to me, is the bottom line. I mean, you know, it's nice to talk about all this stuff, but in the end, you got to get people in the White House, in the Congress, in the state houses, and state legislatures, by the way, are very important. A lot of stuff happens in the states.
I'm gonna pass it off to Eric and see if he has anything to add here. Eric, are you there?
Yeah. These are the conversations that Lowell and I have had privately over the years. So I'll just make two quick points and then see if Lowell wants to respond, sort of echo some of the stuff we've talked about but never recorded. I think that, yes, the Tea Party was an instrument of the ruling class, and unfortunately the ruling class has chosen the Republican Party during the past few cycles as their instrument, and it's because they know that in order to get the electoral results that they need, there needs to be a reliable voting base, and those people are all consumers of media products that are designed to elect mm-hmm. Republicans. And so you had the collapse of the Bush administration, the economic freefall that we were in, the failure of the Iraq war, the failure of trickle-down economics, and then you have this charismatic new leader that comes along that has the opportunity to bring in constituencies that had voted in conveniently low levels previously, minorities and young people. And so I think the Tea Party was simply an act of desperation from the ruling class, who, yes, does choose the Republican Party in the current cycle. And it was a reality TV show that they aired every day for many, many years to get us focused on something else. Because if we actually looked at the knowable world in 2008, we had a successful Clinton administration where we had record surpluses and we had booming economy, and we managed to stay out of wars. And then the Bush administration, I think everyone agreed, had been a failure. And so if Obama had succeeded, then that would have been extremely bad for their electoral future. So the Tea Party, yes, it's successful because it was on TV every day, because 1% media made sure it was on TV every day. You take the Occupy movement, I documented several cities of occupiers. I never met an occupier who hadn't heard about it on the web. I also documented the Tea Party movement. I never met a Tea Party person who hadn't heard it not only on TV, but on a particular channel on TV. It was completely constructed by manipulating the consumers of media products into activists to support an agenda that was being paid for by the people who produced those media products. The occupiers, yes, it was all over the place because it was like a democracy. It was like our government was supposed to be designed inclusive. And if you talk to, I went there. If you talk to the people who really, talk to the people who were like college students who had this enormous debt from their student loans and they couldn't find a job, they understood that it had to do with money and politics and Citizens United and Wall Street and K Street. And then it was the media coverage, the same media coverage that constructed the Tea Party, who gave us the sense that the Occupy movement was not only chaotically disorganized, but also violent and unclean and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was there too, and my frustration was, again, with the media that does not inform, but instead wants to push an agenda, or is just plainly the you take your pick. When I went to our Occupy, all the reports I was expecting, young college-age students, hippies, dirty people. When I got there, I found a plaza in the heart of downtown Minneapolis that had been divided into different areas where people could attend different teach-ins, different sit-ins. You could join different teams and to be part of running the entire movement. It was a local movement dedicated to Minneapolis and Minnesota issues. There was a family section for families, and there was also a huge amount of donations that had come pouring in. And almost everybody there was either older than me, my age. There were very few people that were younger than me. And there were families there with children. And I did not hear about that in the media at all. And so, again, it's frustrating when I hear talk about Occupy, because every city, every Occupy had its own focus, its own direction, because it was locally run. It wasn't a top-down situation like the Tea Party. It wasn't backed by billionaires like the Tea Party. And now our Occupy has continued and has been very successful with Occupy Homes Minnesota, which was one of the first Occupy movements to start occupying foreclosed homes and working as a community on behalf of people who've been foreclosed on to try and get their homes saved so that they could stay in them. And the first person that they began working with was a single mom, and she was working two jobs. When she got laid off one, she fell two payments behind and then was unable to negotiate with the bank after that. Thanks to Occupy, she actually went down to Occupy and said, "Help me. nobody will help me. I've tried to do everything they said. I call, I get this runaround. And then we've also had a veteran, a Marine veteran, who was also able to save his home. Anyway, there's been several homes now that have been negotiated.
Well, let's let Lowell respond.
Only because of the community.
Yeah. You know, I think most of what I agree with most of what you said, Eric. I guess I would just say, I mean, again, getting back to sort of basics here of American politics, I mean, there's two major political parties. I mean, this is all obvious. But and then what the Tea Party did very skillfully, I think, also they were backed with tremendous amounts of support from the Koch brothers and others and money. And but they pushed, they relentlessly, they latched on to a vehicle, the Republican Party, and their goal was to push that party to the right, and they did, and they worked at that relentlessly to purge that party of anyone who was even slightly moderate, get them out of there. Even someone who was a mainstream conservative. You have people like Dick Lugar, Senator Dick Lugar in Indiana, was a superb senator, a conservative, but a superb senator, an expert, one of the most respected on foreign policy, one of the most respected senators in Congress. And they ran a Tea Party guy against him who is wildly less qualified in every way you want to say than Lugar. And he beat him. I mean, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, if you, you know, imagine if there was an equivalent on the left and you were pushing, you know, running against some of these corporate Democrats who are in the pocket of, you know, the financial industry or the healthcare industry or whatever, and you were running real progressives. That would be the equivalent on the left to what.
Well, you know what? What we don't have right now is the 1% media network. We don't have the Rush Limbaugh radio stations.
No, we don't.
Nine of the 10 most listened to radio shows are essentially right-wing extremism. And then you have the Fox News network.
Exactly.
And, you know, you guys have talked quite a bit about the – so, you know, imagine if the energy of the Occupy movement, which was self-inspired, right, self-generated through the web, was supported instead
right.
of undermined and really sabotaged by 1% media. If it was supported by a media construct, that would be one thing. The Tea Party having success basically by being extras in a reality TV show that's scripted, produced, and paid for by the 1%, I don't really hand them a lot other than that they, yeah, if I were directing a movie and I wanted obedient extras who got mad on command, yeah, I would, you know, it
right.
would be nice if they had some other emotions, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
they were really obedient extras in a movement to basically undermine this country's recovery from the Great Recession. And,
right.
And
I agree with that. I mean,
guys,
you know,
I have a caller calling in from 908. Let's see what the
okay.
Caller, are you there?
Are you there?
Okay, I'm going to mute caller on 908 for a moment. If you'd like to call in and add your voice, you can, but you have to turn off your computer, the sound down, otherwise we get feedback. And then just if you raise your hand, listen for your area code. If you are in area code 908, I'm going to come back to you one more time, give you a chance to join us here at the tail end, make a brief point, and give us your name and where you're calling from. 908, are you there?
Hey, Jessica, one other thing that Lowell and I often talk about, I wanted to give him a chance to comment on.
Yes.
It's that when extremism is given undue influence over a county government, as we saw in 9500 Liberty, or over a federal government, as we've seen in the backlash against the election of Barack Obama, what happens is that there's two ways we can go, right? We can respond and say, well, we better be as tough and extreme and, frankly, as scary as the tactics that we see on the far right, or we could look at it and say, wow, they've moved so far to the right, and their tactics are so alienating. There's actually an opportunity here to reach into the conservative sectors of society, reach into the Republican Party, extend a hand, and say, do you really identify with that? Is that really how you want to see your country go? I'd rather see our country fail than succeed under a Democratic president? Is that really what you believe? And then take that opportunity to offer people a more authentic, a more patriotic way to participate. And that's what we're trying to do with Coffee Party. I think
mm-hmm.
we also need the guys like Lowell, who are the firebrands, who can be, you know, just as fierce and aren't gonna make any effort to be, you know, conciliatory or whatever, and maybe not always as civil. But it takes
both.
Well,
what do you think of that?
I think what I'm in is the mainstream of what American politics has always been. I mean, in the sense that you have two parties, they fight it out hard. There's nothing unnatural about this. Now, I do think one party lurched to the far right. I think the Republican Party, which I used to be a member of, is unrecognizable today. The people that, when I started in the Republican Party, today would be like totally ostracized. I don't think Ronald Reagan could win. The nomination of Reagan raised taxes numerous times. He signed a mass amnesty for illegal immigrants, quote unquote. You know, you can go on and on. I mean, that just shows you how far they've lurched to the right. I just believe in fighting back against extremist movements, which that is what I think that has become, and fighting for what I believe in, progressive values, democratic values, whatever. I mean, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think it's – I think it's totally natural. I have no problem with conservatives fighting for what they believe in. I think they should. But I think, you know, yeah, in terms of the media, it is stacked against progressives right now. There's like – the conservatives dominate talk radio. They dominate in many ways TV. They have their own whole network, Fox News, certainly. The media, the print media, also is owned by a few corporate conglomerates. So I guess the question for Eric is, okay, so that's the situation. So what are we going to do about it? Now, you know.
Well, I think that's a great segue into our closing here.
Yeah.
We have gone past the last 15 minutes. So I want to thank you, Lowell, for joining us. Can you give us the web address if people want to check out your blog?
Yeah, it's www.bluevirginia.us.
Awesome. Well, I hope everyone heads over there and checks out more of your writing. And thank you again for taking time to be on our show today and being on the very first kickoff show on Big Marker. It was great to talk to you and to hear your perspectives on the presidential race and on politics in general. I'm really glad that there's so many people out there advocating for people to get involved. I think that is the real answer. And I'm going to go ahead and speak to the idea of how people can get involved. But thanks again.
All right. Thank you. Good talking to you.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Bye.
Well, guys, if you are interested in being the media, of course, Coffee Party has a Be the Media campaign going right now. And there are many ways that you can get involved. We've been putting out the call for people to help us with our Scoop It pages, and that's been great, but I know there's a lot of people who really want to actually get down to the nitty-gritty and help us out with these radio shows, which are now also obviously going to be webcasted, hopefully. And so if you're interested in doing that, if you even just want to sit in on a brainstorming session, give us ideas for topics, tell us who you'd like to hear on the radio, or if you actually want to be on the technical side of helping us develop this technology. Todd has done a great job during this entire radio show of playing around, monkeying around with all the different things that Big Marker can do. And it is a really cool site. And so if you're interested, it's a great chance for you to get involved and be the media and tell your story, tell the story. Let's set up a framework for getting out the knowable world, especially in your neck of the woods, both on local level and national level. If you'd like to get involved, you can write me at thebottomline@coffeepartyusa, and also contact Coffee Party. You're unmuted, so you can tell us.
Okay. Go to coffeepartyusa.com/social-media, or you can also write to me at Eric with a C, Eric, E-R-I-C, at coffeepartyusa.com.
Okay. We are going to go ahead and wrap up our show today, but I want to put out a thank you to Janine and Donna and Chad and all the people who joined us on Big Marker to help us experiment with that format. Also, thanks again to Lowell Feld for joining us. He was the blogger who called in today and was our guest talking about presidential elections and other issues. And I encourage everyone to get involved. It feels so great to have a community of people to work together with on these issues instead of just sitting there and screaming in frustration at your Facebook page because it feels like there's nothing that we can do and that our country is just going to go to those who have the ability to write the biggest paycheck. So, again, thanks for joining us on The Bottom Line. I hope to see you or talk to you or listen to you next week. Same time, Sundays, 5 p.m. Eastern. Thanks again and have a great night.